Welcome to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production. Hi, I'm Carol Bissett, a crime writer, and I invite you with my co-presenters, Liz Hedgecock and Mike Jackson, each week to our conversations on all things murderous. Hello, it's that time of the week again, and we're here with our latest episode of Only Murders in My Mind. And with me, as usual, I've got Liz Hedgecock.
Hello.
And Mike Jackson.
Good afternoon, ladies.
What are you doing with your novella at the moment? Sorry, Mike.
Why does that question, every time it's asked, make the pair of you burst into...
We're just waiting to hear what you'll come up with this time, it's Ace.
Well, fun enough you should ask, because recently I was having to think about this novella.
Don't
get too excited. I was merely having a think about it.
And
I had this idea of a novella whereby... I like writing short stories, so this novella, when it's written, is in some ways it's going to be a series of short stories that somehow are linked. And one of the ideas I've had is to have three characters somewhere. I need a setting
somewhere.
I need a setting for them.
Right. Listeners, you know what to do. Please give Mike suggestions for a setting.
That would be
the
very
weirder
helpful,
the better.
That would be even more helpful. And to have these three people bouncing off each other, but having something that links them together.
Yeah. Mm.
And I reckon if I did that, and each chapter was about 1,500 words, I'd need 20 chapters, possibly more, 25 chapters.
But it could be a work in process, couldn't it? You could do it over 12 months.
This novella has been a work in progress.
Progress.
For some time now.
But has it been in progress though, or has it just been sort of sitting there?
Depends on how you
define. Does it have a physical being?
It's an idea in my head.
How physical
do you want it to be?
Well, the whole program's called Only Murders in My Mind. So
yes. Only novellas in my mind. Yeah.
That could be a spin-off.
Yeah.
Exploring Mike's mind. You know.
Blimey.
Well, I'll get on to what we're going to talk about today.
Let's just carry on talking about Mike's novella. It's much more fun.
Espionage and spy thrillers. Where crimes are committed, or maybe not even. And there's a lot of them about. And I've got to be honest, I love a good spy thriller. I really do.
Ooh. So what's your favourite? Do you have a favourite? Or do you have an author that you like? Or
It's a guilty pleasure, but I do like the James Bond and the Bourne identity. Mission Impossible, all those sorts of things, which aren't really crime. Well, they are, but it's international crime where people are going to blow up the world.
It's that thing where people think that, you know, espionage is sort of different from crime, but I think it's a different scale. Is that fair to say?
I think it's more political crime.
Yeah, because it's quiet crime, can't it? Yeah. Espionage. Sort of done on the down low.
Yeah.
I'm down with the kids down low.
I think the thing is, you can have this political mysteries, this espionage, these thrillers, and whether the crime is not big business or anything, it's usually more political. But invariably, somebody gets hurt, murdered, injured. Mm. Something goes wrong. If you think of all the spy thrillers that we've read or watched, I doubt if we could think of one where somebody hasn't been killed. Even if it's been poisoned with an umbrella tip because they are somebody's moved away from another country or whatever, it's still murder in one way or the other.
And we have seen in this country real spies being killed by really... We talked a couple of weeks ago about unusual modes of murder.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, is it plutonium? Polonium? It was polonium. One spy was killed by in this country.
And years ago, there was the poison tip of an umbrella.
Yeah.
And there was all the business at Salisbury, of course.
At Salisbury.
Yeah. So, as we've said before, fact is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
Mm. And when we write our stories and people go, well, would that really happen? And you go, it could.
Yeah.
Yes, and possibly already has.
Probably already has.
I think one of my favourites is John le Carré.
Oh, yeah. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier.
Yeah. His stories are, I always find they're very, very slow. Almost ponderous, but there's something. I know when I watched the first time I watched Tinker, Tailor, Soldier,
Spy.
Mm. It's what you might almost call a sort of slow movie. There was not a lot of talking happening, or if the talking was happening, it was all very sort of almost ponderous, almost, you know, you think, come on, get a move on sort of thing. But that's just the way this whole story is put together, the way he writes. It's not meant to be quick paced.
There was an undercurrent, though.
Yes.
Often, yeah.
Yes.
Which is what kept you reading or watching if you watched the film, you know, because you kept thinking.
Well, it's a real contrast to something like James Bond. In James Bond, everything happens 110 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't believe any of it could possibly be true. John le Carré, because it goes along at a much slower pace, you could think, I could imagine this happening in Whitehall or in, you know, Berlin.
This is it. It's the exchange of prisoners, isn't it, on the bridge?
Yeah.
You know, from east to west. Yeah. Are they going to get across? Or is a sniper going to take them out? Oof. Those sorts of things, yeah. It's really interesting.
So which version of Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy did you watch?
Pass.
I've watched both of them.
Was it the Alec Guinness one?
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
I've watched both of them. They both had merits.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did they compare?
I think
is it the Gary Oldman one that you...
I think it was a little bit faster in pace, the modern one. Just a little bit. Mm. You know, I think there was a few more curveballs made more... You were aware of sort of things that could go wrong more. Whereas the original one was, you had it pinned down there. It was, you knew something was going to happen, but you weren't sure when, and it didn't matter.
But it's all very dark, you know. I mean, everybody wore grey suits.
Yeah,
all the buildings seemed to be grey everywhere. It, the whole thing seemed to be very dark and mysterious.
A bit depressing.
Yep.
Yeah, sort of the gloom. But I think a lot of post-war countries were like that, weren't
they? Oh, yes.
You know, they were trying to recover from the war sort of thing. And there was this Cold War going on. And there was a lot of things going on behind the scenes that, you know, that we didn't know about, probably didn't want to know about. What are your favourites, Liz?
Oh, well, I'm going to go for the modern one and go for Slow Horses.
Oh, yes. I've not seen the television programmes, but I've read the books.
Gary Oldman again.
Yes.
So
I don't know this
cornered the market in Spy People,
I think. It's strange. It's almost like the Misfits from MI...
yes.
Is it MI6, MI5? Does it really matter?
MI5, I think it is. But the idea is... Yeah, if you're a failed spy, you get shipped off to Slough House.
That's right.
Yeah. And they're nicknamed the Slow Horses.
Yeah.
And then they get involved in stuff that they're not meant to get involved in. And then Diana Taverner usually is like, what are you lot doing here, Jackson Lammond? You know, Jackson Lammond's just like, you know, fueling the fire most of the time.
Like new tricks, the men that come out of being retired to solve cold cases, but
yeah, except this, I think this lot they've not really got a purpose in life. They've already sort of been shoved to get out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I don't think they can fire them.
No,
but what they're trying to do is make their work life so mind-numbingly boring that they leave of their own accord.
Yeah,
that's what they, you know, that's what Jackson Lamb's job is. He's presiding over this lot.
Mm.
You know, and he does make their life misery a lot of the time.
He's an unpleasant man, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you get the full force of that in the in the adaptation, definitely.
Yeah. So I really must look into that because it sounds excellent.
It is a lot of fun. In the first book, you know, you tend to find out what everybody did to get themselves shipped over to Slough House. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but even in the Thursday Murder Club, there's some espionage going on there.
Of course, yes.
You know, which... is very subtle, but one of the characters has definitely been in the Secret Service. I mean, MI5 and MI6. MI5, I mean, military intelligence, isn't it? That's what the MI stands for. And somebody defined MI5 as the people that
gather the information and MI6 are the spies.
Oh, right.
I don't know whether that was a broad sweeping statement.
Yes.
I tell you what I used to like, it's not been on television for a long time, that was Spooks.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, I don't think I've watched that. Oh, so tell me
good.
About it.
It was really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly the opposite, John le Carré. It was fast moving and what have you.
Quite brutal in parts.
Quite very brutal in
they
parts.
They always killed off one of the popular characters each series.
Got off. Yeah. You know. I remember one episode where she was almost like a trainee spy. I got embroiled somehow. I'd got off and done something. I think she'd gone off with one of the senior team and these baddies. I'm sure there must be a better way. We'll use baddies.
Master spy.
got hold of her and dipped her head into boiling fat in a chicken.
Ow!
Yes, we all did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they blow characters up, popular characters, on a regular basis, you know. And there was always this thing as well when you the double agent. You know, there was a little bit of that going on as well. Yeah. Oh, it was a brilliant series. Yeah. Yeah, I think it probably went off a little bit at the end, but
it's like all these.
Jump the shark.
Yeah. Sometimes these things are so good to start with that people persevere with them and, let's do another series,
Yeah, well, I imagine if it's a ratings hit then.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think you often find that by the time you get to the last series, you can see why they decided to
run the course. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I must admit, I felt like that with BBC Sherlock.
Yes. Right. Yeah, the last one or two episodes were strained.
Yeah, I thought the last series, I spent most of my time shouting at the TV again, come on now.
Yeah, we did as well. It's funny that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can watch the first, were there three or four series?
I think there were four.
I could watch the first three quite happily again and again, but I've never, ever tried to watch those last few because it did infuriate me that it was a bit, wasn't right. It didn't feel right.
So what do you like about the McHerron books, Mike?
Because
I know you haven't seen the series.
I think it's the quirkiness, because when you look at it, there will be these people in any organisation, let alone, someone like MI5, MI6, that for some reason or another don't fit in.
Mm.
They're not part of the team. And what do you do with them? And the fact that somebody has found this building that nobody's used for a long time, it's falling apart, and think, let's ship them over there, out of sight, out of mind. And it just makes for a whole setting. Now I'm looking for a setting, aren't I, from my novella?
Anyway.
Yes. Well, actually, I believe the building where they film it has been up for sale.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right. Need to do some research.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, no, that they create everything about it is such that it shouldn't really work. These people have got nothing in common. They don't like each other.
Except for being failures in quotes.
Yeah. Jackson
well, that's Land. The thing that ties them together. Yeah. They're all stuck in this, hell where they're being tormented by Jackson Land.
Dante's level of
He'll do things like get them looking through the last 10 years of parking charges in Camden. Yeah, so it really is bad. I mean, he devises these awful things for them to do.
And again, he's another one that the bosses wanted to get shot of, so they put him in this place.
Well, it's a loose cannon, isn't it?
The building itself is dilapidated.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is just so, in some ways, bizarre.
Yeah.
It's cleverly thought of and makes for a good story.
Mm-hmm. And you can see why. It's a bit different, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can see why it became a film, because you can picture the building, you can picture these characters.
Yeah, and the thing is also, they're failures in quotes again, but they're also the underdogs.
Mm.
And you desperately want them to prevail.
Yes.
Always.
The other thing is, I think about, everything and everyone is fallible.
Yeah.
So you've got over the way, you've got MI5, MI6, whichever one it is, and all the people there. And of course they slip up too. And sometimes it's a case of, are our plucky underdogs going to win this, or is the big official machine going to get there first?
Yeah, we always want, you're right, we always want the underdogs.
Yeah.
Sometimes even when the underdogs are the baddies.
Because the thing is, Jackson Lamb has got his own agenda.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily the same agenda as the people who are paying him to do what he's supposed to be doing.
But again,
they can't get rid of him.
No. And to a certain extent, he doesn't necessarily protect his team, but he is protective of them if anybody else
Yes.
You know, he can have a go at them and make their life misery, but and nobody else does. Well, that, nobody
that's
else
like
is going to do
that. Sibling thing, isn't it? I can punch my sister, but you're not punching her.
Yeah. So if you haven't watched the series and you've got Apple TV, then absolutely go watch it.
I really must get Apple. There's two or three things on Apple TV that I
believe they're filming series four.
Yes. Oh, it must be a good selling point for them, though, mustn't it? Things like that. They don't seem to have an awful lot, but they have some really good.
Yeah.
We're not on commission from Apple TV.
Although, Apple TV, if you want to, you know.
If you want to sponsor the show, please get in
touch. Yeah, that'd be really nice.
Anybody that we promote in our show is just done because we like them, admire them. We do not get any financial reward.
We don't. No.
Should we talk about Porsche?
Oh, the other thing is Mick Herron's other series, I think it's Zoe Bohm, I haven't read any of them, I will say, they are going to be starting filming that with Emma Thompson in it.
I don't think I've read
Zoe Bohm. I can't tell you anything about it because I've not read them. I think I've got On Cemetery Road sitting at home. I think she's a private investigator, so it won't be quite the same setup, but there you go. There's the news where you are.
Another one to watch.
Potentially. But yes. So, should we talk about James Bond a bit?
Yes.
Because everyone always talk about James Bond.
Always talk about James.
Yeah. Films or books?
Oh, I've never read a book. Never read a Fleming book.
No, I've not.
I've probably watched all the films. Yeah. And some
I think I must have watched all the films except I haven't watched all the Daniel Craig ones.
Oh, no, I think I've probably watched them all.
No, I might have missed...
It's that escapism, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I don't know whether the latest one, I can't remember.
I really enjoyed No Time to Die, I have to say. I thought that was a cracker.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Quantum of Solace, I'm like, that's 3 hours of my life I'm never getting back.
Which is the one where he died?
Spoilers.
Oh, sorry. Well, he dies all the time, doesn't he? They just bring him back looking different.
Well, he doesn't die all the time. He generally doesn't die.
No, that's true.
But there we go. I've read the books and they're quite different.
Did you say in the previous episode that they're not very long books?
They're not, no.
I always imagine them being like this thick.
No, they're like, for
those that can't see my fingers, like, I'm 3 inches.
So I was about to say they're yay big, which of course is very helpful for you people listening to us. But yeah, I'd say they're maybe 40,000 or 50,000. They're not long books at all. And the interesting thing was Fleming was very, very involved in, you know, how it was going to be marketing, what the cover was going to look like. He had very definite ideas about that and he would fight his corner. It wasn't like, I'm just going to write these and let you get on with it.
Because some of the covers are iconic, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. The original ones. Yeah,
art deco-y type.
Yeah, all those, you know, those amazing kind of lurid 50s or 60s covers.
Yeah.
Yeah, those ones as well.
Red with black on and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you read some of them. I mean, some of the films are, you know, have the same title as a short story, but, you know, the plot is completely different. I mean, they're not all like that. Some of them are much closer. So I think You Only Live Twice is one of the closer ones. But they're not the kind of, they're not overblown in the same way as a lot of the films are. You see what I mean? They don't jump the shark in the same way.
No.
I think that's quite interesting how an adaptation could be so very different.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this a bit before with regards to Agatha Christie and the various Hercule Poirot. So.
Yeah, I mean, they had to, didn't they? They had to make the films this spectacular event. And as we've said before about putting gadgets in, people love the gadgets.
Yeah, and it feels like they've become something quite different.
Yeah.
Well, I think they are. I think they've probably lost any connection with the books. They've almost got a life of their own, aren't they? You know, you expect James Bond to have car chases, you expect
few explosions,
all the gadgets.
Terrible jokes occasionally.
Yes.
Especially if you're watching a Roger Moore one.
Yes.
You know, the eyebrow. Some sort of colourful villain.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Love interest, of course. Sex interest, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's not a lot of love in there, is there?
There was one where he got married and that made me cry. That was the Jolly Green Giant. No, it wasn't the Jolly Green Giant. It was...
Hang on, that's Sweet Corn.
I was going to say.
Am I into the parallel universe again?
I'm trying to think of it. He only did one film, and he was he did adverts for children to keep them safe.
Dave Prowse?
Oh, Green Cross Code Man.
Green Cross Code Man, yes.
Who was he?
Can't remember.
It was Prowse, wasn't it?
No, I don't think it was. We'll have to Google it.
Dave Prowse?
Our producer is intervening.
Yeah.
It's so we don't fight, folks. That's what it is.
He played Darth Vader.
Well, yes, he did, didn't he?
The guy in the suit. Yeah, yeah. Voice him,
but, yeah, James Earl Jones did the voice, didn't he, for Darth Vader. But who was he in James Bond? Was he?
I have no idea.
Which character are you thinking of, Carol? You know when people say they like it when we go off for one? I think this is perhaps our best one ever.
Yes.
James. We're all Googling like mad now.
Yeah.
Now, while they're checking this out, let me just talk to you a little bit about my novella.
Oh, absolutely. Go for it.
Yeah.
So I mean, the most popular one was Sean Connery, I think.
Of course, there are the spy stories that...
He made his film debut in 1967, James Bond's spoof, Casino Royale, playing Frankenstein's creature. There you go. So he was in a James Bond film, but I must admit that's one I haven't seen.
Was it a spoof, though? Was it?
It was the David Niven one, not the
George
Daniel Craig
Lazenby.
One.
George Lazenby.
Ah.
He was in some sort of advert. And he was
a model, wasn't he?
Yes, he was in one Bond film, and that was it. That's all he ever did.
I can't
remember.
I don't think he had a connection with Sweetcorn.
No, I don't think he did.
That was amazing. Oh. Wow. Anyway, tell us about your novella, Mike, because you brought it up. Have you got a setting yet?
Well, I've thought of this place, this dilapidated building.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Quite close to MI6 building.
Yeah, would it be somewhere near the Barbican?
Yes, right, yes. Yeah, yes. Okay. You've probably been there.
Yes, I've been around the Barbican recently, actually.
Yeah. Going back to espionage and spy thrillers. I can't for the life of me. This is awful.
I'm wondering now whether Carol is a top international spy because she's just successfully deflected a perfectly good conversation.
Sorry about that.
No, spy thrillers with children in. Was it Horowitz? Anthony Horowitz? Did he?
Stormbreaker?
Yes.
Alex Rider.
Alex Rider.
Yeah.
Because my nephew, when he was 13, 14, was fascinated with these. And,
they're really popular.
Yeah, very popular. So I think it's a 13 or 14-year-old boy who is a...
Spy.
A spy.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it was... Am I right in thinking it was Anthony Horowitz?
Yeah, it was.
I thought it was.
And then there's Charlie Higson's Young Bond books.
Oh, right.
Which are more kind of young adults. Yeah. So those were good, but scary in places.
Yes.
I read Silverfin, I was like, But then again, I'm quite squeamish. So, you know, don't take me for, you know.
I mean, sort of going off on a tangent, which I know is something.
Yeah, like, we're talking about espionage.
No, I'm just about to go off on another tangent.
You're supposed to be one who brings us back when we've gone off on about sweet corn. You'll never live that one down.
About YA, young adult.
Oh, yes.
You know, you saying that it can be quite squeamish. I've read a few young adult books, mm-hmm. and they really are very, very good. Mm. You know, they're I think you could read, I know they come with that young adult genre, but I think many of them you could read as an adult. And I'm never quite sure what pushes it into the YA genre rather than an adult book.
So were J.K. Rowling's young adults?
I think the early ones start, they're kind of more middle grade, aren't they?
Yes, yeah.
And I think the later ones, because I think the series kind of was meant to grow with the... Yeah,
with the reader, and it did get more violent and everything, didn't it?
But you think, when you think with those books, I can remember many youngsters at school getting those early, you know, the first Harry Potter books, and they would have been about 7 or 8 avid readers.
Mm.
And when you think the last Harry Potter came out, what, 6, 7 years later? Was it 1 year almost?
I'm not sure.
Some of those 7-year-olds started, some of those sort of grew up with it, so they were... in that sort of teenage age group when they were reading the later ones, which were more bloodthirsty.
Yeah, and complete doorstops.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the later ones, she might have had bigger gaps in actually between writing them and them being written.
Yeah, because didn't she have to check into a hotel to finish off one of them? Because she just wasn't getting it finished. Yeah.
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, poor woman, you know. Deprived.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, with room service.
Yeah. It's a hard life.
When so if anyone wants to put me up in a hotel while I finish my latest, yeah. then, you know.
Well, if somebody puts me up in a hotel, I might start my novella.
Yeah.
Sorry for laughing, but, yes. you know. Right, so espionage. What more can we say about it?
I don't know. I think for the first time, we are actually sort of almost running out of...
Oh, I think we're good.
I mean, I know somebody... Somebody who I have read once or twice... James Patterson.
Yes.
A lot of his books come in under that umbrella of, spies, espionage.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a strange author. I've read a couple of his more detective books.
Yeah.
And they've been okay. But apparently he's one of the most borrowed books in libraries
okay.
in the country.
And
I'm
why
not sure.
do you think that is? Do you think that's because there's a lot of them?
I think it's because there's a lot of them.
Yeah. I suspect also, if you're the kind of reader who wants a very particular thing, you know, and you know that here's an author with an awful lot of books that I can work my way through, and that's what you like doing, then, you know.
I think they're an easy read as well. Mm,
I've never read one, so I can't read a comment couple. On yeah. that.
They're fast-paced. I don't mean easy in any derogatory way. I just mean an easy one to get into and to get mm-hmm. through.
Yeah. Well, I think that there is a particular skill in writing a page-turning book that's a quick, easy read. And I think sometimes that's underappreciated.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been reading a book just, and it's... I'm not going to say which book it was. There's probably people out there who absolutely love it. It wasn't a crime read. So it's not really applicable to this, but it was supposed to be funny. And I think the thing with humour is sometimes it doesn't always land right, but it felt like it didn't have a plot. It just meandered.
Yeah. Mm.
And it took me ages to get through it because I'd think, well, I just don't know where this is going. Things just happen with
like
no...
Like knitting with soup.
Yeah, it was very like knitting. And then, you know, it referenced the pandemic towards the end, and that was what really finished the book.
Right.
And it was like, well, it wasn't anything the characters did. It was just, you know, life happened. Let's finish the book there.
I mean,
it just felt very odd. And I think there is a particular skill to steering a reader through the book that isn't necessarily appreciated. Yeah.
I think with spy and espionage, I think there's for me, it goes into two teams. You've got the, like Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, where there is a lot happening in the background and you know there's information going on. And then you've got the sort where something's happening and people are being killed all the time and they're chasing and you know the spy's living in fear for his life and all the rest of it. I mean, and they're good. I enjoy them. I really do. But it's the ones where, you know, like there's maybe a scientist and his family disappear. And they're saying to him, well, you know, you come and work for us and your family will be fine. You know that subtle threat that you've got with it? And then sort of MI5, I've got to write, come and find them, or MI6, I've got to rescue them, that sort of thing. I do enjoy that side of it. Again, you're going back to things like spooks. That sort of thing would happen on a regular basis, wouldn't it, with spooks?
I'm not sure how popular they are now.
What, the subtle ones?
No, the espionage.
Oh, generally, yeah. Generally.
I mean, Slow Horses does amazingly well.
It does, doesn't
from
it? Yeah.
What
yeah.
I understand.
Yeah. Bond always does.
Bond always does. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, John Le Carré, obviously. Yes. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, a kind of a strange example, I suppose, was has anyone read Destination Unknown by Agatha Christie?
Mm,
and that's sort of a bit espionage-y. And you have a woman who I think is. She's survived a crash, I think it is, and she's escaped with her life, and she's quite depressed. And anyway, she gets kind of recruited to go and infiltrate. See, it's not very Agatha Christie, is it?
No.
To go and infiltrate like this setup in the desert, this scientific facility.
Oh, it isn't like her.
No, and I mean it's a really interesting book, but it doesn't read like an Agatha Christie at all. So it's a funny one.
Maybe it was one of the days when she was fed up with Hercule.
She was trying to write something kind of fashionable.
Yeah, something different.
But again, it's that sort of, oh, is it them? Is it them? Who could it be sort of thing. Yeah. I think a lot of espionage, it's the kind of not quite knowing who's on your side or what will happen and that uncertainty. So it could be this or it could be that. And you've got all these things going on in your head.
That sounds interesting, actually. Do you think the people that have been most successful at writing do have an intelligence background? Because some of them have worked in they've got...
William Fleming was...
He worked in...
In the position.
Yeah, he worked in MI5.
And John le Carré as well.
Possibly less so now. I mean, once upon a time, I would imagine it would be very difficult to do any research.
And they'd have to be careful about what they printed because of the Official Secrets Act.
I mean, once upon a time, you would never know who the head of MI5 or MI6 were. But now,
we do know who they are.
Of course, now you've got like people like Stella Rimington, who's a novelist now.
Yeah.
So
it must help, mustn't it? Because if you, as I'm just speaking, you know, if you've got a background in a certain field, that knowledge must help you if you want to write a book, you know. And I know a lot of police officers will end up writing detective novels and things. So when they've retired, not saying they're good, but they, you know, some of them really are.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the uncertainty thing, I'm just kind of thinking through for myself, I suppose. I think part of being a successful spy is being able to kind of live with that and all those multiple things that might be going on and not giving the game away that you've got any idea of what it might be. And, you know, I'm just living my life here sort of thing, and just being able to stay calm while, you know, anything could happen next.
I'm most fascinated by the term sleepers.
Yes.
You know, we always associate it with like Russian spies being in here, this country in America. But I'm sure there are sleepers from here and America somewhere in countries. Where they're living normal lives waiting to be woken up as a spy.
But that's the fascination, isn't it? Because those lives are not normal in as much as being a spy or being a potential spy means that you have to live a lie and you have to be good at living a lie. And I sometimes think that people who have to live a lie for many, many years, great chunk of their life, then the difference between what's the truth, what's reality and what's the lie.
Yeah.
It must be a strange...
It must all merge.
Yeah, it must be a strange balancing act.
They must have triggers for them. They must have, you know, sort of... I have visions of them being brainwashed before they're placed as sleepers so that there's a trigger, you know, something, a word or something like that, or a phrase.
It's a bit like all the aliens that are living on the world now, just waiting for that trigger before they all rise up.
Like in Men in Black.
Yeah. It's a bit like AI. It's just waiting for the trigger before it takes over the world.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it would come in there somewhere.
Listening to a fascinating book at the moment, talking about humour, which you were just now, Liz.
Yes.
It's all about the Time Police, set in the future.
Okay.
And their job is to stop anybody. Apparently, travelling back in time had become quite the norm.
Yeah.
And it was causing all sorts of problems with history being mucked up.
Warped.
So they've got the Time Police, whose job is to go and get hold of these people and lock them up.
Who's it by? What's it called?
Jodie Taylor.
Ah, right, yes.
And it's a series. It's Killing Time. And they're all something time. I'm on the second one.
I've seen them advertised.
Humorous. Very humorous. Very light-hearted.
Time Police to me is the mum stood at the door when a child comes in going, "What time do you call?" That's the Time Police to me. So.
Indeed.
I think that's you've got a lovely sunset on your phone.
I have. Yes. It's Crosby Beach.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's one of the Crosby men there.
I thought it was somewhere like, you know, Death in Paradise type places. No, it's very Crosby. Nice. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Right. So we'll bring it to a close there, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Please feedback if there's things that you'd like us to do, things you'd like us to talk about, within reason, obviously. We're prepared to look at that. And
yep. If you want to hear more about sweet corn, we're game.
You're right, I'll never live that down. It's nearly as bad as the time when I organised a night out for people I worked with and I ended up in the wrong town. They all end
that's
up in the right.
Yeah, 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 episode, yeah, definitely. Yeah, so, I think this was some kind of masterstroke on your part. I'd like to know what you were doing in that other town.
Oh, yeah.
Carol, while you misdirected everybody.
Carol, this might be a good time to finish.
I will. So, hope you enjoy this episode and we'll be back at the same time next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
You have been listening to Only Murders in My Mind, a Random Thought production, produced by John Bissett. The music, In Peril, was composed and recorded by OM Studio Strings.